powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, time for some Seahawks talk. Joining us now on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline, it is Danny Kelly of The Ringer. Danny, I want to start right away with the Seahawks and specifically the Seahawks offense. Now, you have been talking for a while about making some changes on offense, just the way that you'd like to see them best take advantage of some of the explosive weapons they have. Obviously, that includes Wilson, but it includes Metcalf. It includes Lockett. Do you feel like you saw a step forward there this past Sunday?
Yeah, I did. It felt so. The offense felt more crisp, and I don't know what the word is, maybe just logical, than it had in a while. And I think especially it started with just the use of deception in pretty much everything they were doing, whether it was pre-snap motion, orbit motion after the snap, play action, all those things working together, the way that they were able to, you know, use the same formations and same looks, but then run different things out of them, is just making things difficult on the defense. That's something I've been, you know, and I have, and football nerds have been preaching for years now, just like make it harder on the defense. Don't be predictable. And I think that was kind of like the main takeaway I had. It wasn't like they were reinventing the wheel, but they were definitely just getting creative with it.
Now, Danny, why is that so important? I mean, for people out there that hear that, they go, okay, well, you're motioning a lot. You're creating deception. Cool. That's great. But what exactly, from the Seahawks' perspective, what they've done the last 9 years, why has that put them in a difficult position offensively?
So I think it just, I mean, first of all, put yourself in the position of a defense when you have all this eye candy to deal with, you know, when they snap the ball or before they snap the ball. It's like the defensive end on one side has to kind of honor the idea that they're going to hand off on the jet sweep, or they have to, you know, kind of just be more aware. So like a thinking defense is a slower defense. Instead of just coming at you full bore as a defensive end, you have to kind of like think and react and wonder what they're doing. So I put together just like a clip of mashup of all the different plays the Seahawks had motion on Sunday. And on a lot of the plays, it's like you can't even quickly tell right away where the ball is. And I think that's the main point, right? It's just making it more difficult for the defense. They have to think. They're slower to react. And therefore, it opens up run lanes. You know, it opens up, it gives the receivers an extra step in a route. And in the NFL, just that one, just a one beat the defense takes to like go the wrong direction could be the difference between a completion and incompletion, or a first down and a touchdown. You know what I mean? And so really that's like the idea. It's, you know, they've always had good players. The Seahawks aren't under Pete Carroll and John Schneider. They typically have very good players. Obviously Russell Wilson's a good quarterback, but I think the edge that the scheme is giving them this year, it feels different, I think, than in the past, whereas like in the past, the Seahawks, I think, would just lean on their skill and their execution and Russell Wilson doing his thing. Mm-hmm. And now it feels almost like the scheme is giving the players a boost too. And that could just be like monumental for them this year. So needless to say, I'm pretty excited about what I saw. They need to continue to do it and be consistent, but the execution was really strong. And I think the scheme was just fun to watch.
Man, there's a lot to unpack with what you just said.
I love all of it, Danny.
And it's all very exciting, Danny. But it is, as a fan, and I'm certainly been guilty of this as well, is looking around the league at some of the better offenses for years now and go, well, how the heck are they doing a running back screen that Seattle's tried to do, and they're having huge explosive plays in Seattle? It's a 1 or 2 yard gain. How are they doing these simple things and yet creating these big explosive plays out of it? And everything that you just described and everything that you highlighted, and I highly suggest going to Danny's Twitter and checking that out, you know, puts a video on and all the pre-snap motions and everything that they were doing after the snap as well. It just gives you a feel and a taste, and that's exactly the eye candy does, what the eye candy can do. It can make easy plays pop and explosive because you're creating that deception. So, Danny, my next question to you is, there was a hot taker out there by the name of Chris Sims out there, and he sits there and says that Shane Waldron, look, he's the apprentice. He's not the master of the system. Therefore, he can't be as good. Are you buying that?
I mean, I don't know. That's very difficult to say because obviously, you know, Sean McVay, very good play caller. And I think the thing that it's so hard to understand and grasp as a fan and as an outsider is, you know, the difference between the scheme and the play calling is a big deal. Like, scheme is scheme, and I think that, you know, anybody, especially someone who studied under McVay, can take that scheme and bring it to Seattle. That's what Shane Waldron has done. However, the play calling aspect of it is situational play calling, what play you choose to use in certain situations, play sequencing, and that's kind of just how to put things together, how to keep a defense on its heels, you know, how to surprise them, how to mix different plays, like when do you call a run, when do you call a throw, like all that stuff goes into play calling. And I think it's too early to say, you know, one way or another. I think I was very encouraged by the play calling this last game. But Shane Waldron is just such a huge unknown at this point. I will say I was excited about the scheme, and I thought the play calling was smart. I'm glad you brought up the screen plays, because, man, I've been over the years just begging the Seahawks to develop a screen game. Every run a good screen, it's like I'm jumping out of my couch and so excited, because that can be such a killer thing for a defense. It's so good at neutralizing pressure. You know what I mean? Like, a team gets all amped up to bring all this heat with the front line, and then you just dump it off to a running back, and they pick up 20 yards. Or in this case, in the Seahawks case, they had two really good screens. One got called back to the tight end, Gerald Everett, who looks really, really fast, explosive. I think he's going to be a fun little weapon for them to use. I would say the jury is definitely still out on whether Shane Waldron is a good play caller, a great play caller, and I think we won't probably know that for like a year or two. Yeah. But, you know, based on everything we saw last week, I was very encouraged.
You wrote for Lookout Landing for a while, and that Field Goals, not Lookout Landing.
Yep, yep.
Field Goals, different SB Nation blog. And you also in that talked a lot about Pete Carroll, took a deep dive into his philosophy, all great stuff. Were you a little surprised to see, because I personally, Danny, if this continues, it feels like a big jump for Pete Carroll, for his offensive philosophy. But I think you understand that even more, having covered it pretty in depth. I mean, were you a little surprised to see how much free reign Waldron maybe had?
Yeah, I think the real test is what's going to happen if and when things kind of start, you know, going poorly. And I don't think you could play the entire year. There's no way that they're going to play the entire year and everything is going to look like, you know, fine and dandy all the time. Mm-hmm. There's going to be injuries. There's going to be issues. Russell Wilson's going to make turnovers. It's going to happen. So I think we don't know yet. I would say, though, that, you know, when they hired Shane Waldron, I was like, oh, this makes so much sense, because Pete Carroll, I think to his core, he's always going to want to be balanced. He's always going to want to have the ability to run the football, because like, he believes that to his core, it's never going away. He's done this for 30 years. And I think in this scheme, like, this is a good scheme to have if you want to run that kind of offense where you have balance and you're able to run the ball, because you're doing so much for your run game with the scheme. And then you can marry that to the play action game. So I think the Seahawks honestly were about league average in terms of their expected run rate or you know what I mean? Like the run pass ratio. And they ran a good amount on first and second down. It wasn't like they were just turning into the Chiefs here where they're passing on first and second down every play. So I think it's a good compromise. And I think he said after the game, I didn't catch his post-game presser, but he said something like something to the effect of adapt or die, basically. So I think, you know, all things considered, it's a very good mix, I guess, of like the future of football, I think, which is very pass heavy, but also like keeping Carroll to like his foundation, which is being able to run the ball when you need to run the ball and how important that is to him. So I think this is the offense that I've been hoping for, considering I'm not ever expecting them to kind of just be a pass first team forever.
You know, Danny, one of the things that you did say was talking about how the scheme could help the talent. And the one thing that has been very clear and something that I've tried to articulate to fans, you know, over the past few years is how the margin for error within this offense has been razor thin, how much exactly they've been putting on Russell Wilson and how he's been able to do it at a high level, but that there's room for the bottom to fall out. There's room for the drop off. There's room for experiences that happen in the second half of last season because of the scheme and because of what you're putting on these players. What about this system allows you to think that it could be the extra sauce, the missing piece to this whole equation for the Seahawks offense that quite honestly, I think we all could agree that if the Seahawks were to get to a Super Bowl, it's going to be because their offense is, you know, tops in the league.
Yeah, yeah, I think they need it to be. I mean, I think the defense did look pretty good, honestly, on Sunday. But, yeah, I think so to me, like, you know, the scheme thing, the scheme versus execution thing has been a big, I guess, you know, point for the Seahawks over the years. Like, if you go back to the Legion of Boom era, their defense, I think, was relatively simple. Like, I remember even, like, K.J. Wright or Cam Chancellor saying it, like, we run cover three. Everyone knows that that's what's coming. We just run it more disciplined and with better execution than everybody else. Also, they have multiple Hall of Fame players on that defense. That helps a lot. And so I think that kind of carries over to the offensive side of the ball, too. Like, generally speaking, under Carroll, it's been very much just like, we're going to out-execute you guys. We're going to execute on third down. That's very important to us, blah, blah, blah. And so I was very encouraged with and going back to what I said at the beginning, you know, all the pre-snap motion just makes it harder on a defense. It makes it harder for the defense to know what's coming, because they're running a lot of the same looks, but then they're doing very different things out of those looks. So the defense can't go, oh, this is where the receivers lined up. They're going to run this play. You know what I mean? And so I'm not saying that in the past, like, they were completely predictable, but I think over the years they've trended towards simplicity and execution. And now it feels like they're bridging the gap where it's more complicated, it's more complex. And you heard just CX players talking about this all preseason. It's more complex. So I'm very excited, just kind of like what that can do, give them a boost. It's like what we've seen McVay do for all his offenses over the years, is why he was able to make Jared Goff so good for, you know, compared to what he was before McVay showed up. And so, yeah, I'm just excited where this can go. Hope they can keep executing. Hope they can stay healthy, because I think this offense could be really, really good.
Last question here, just the final minute or so with you, Danny. I want to take a look outside of Seattle, but I'm not going to go very far because I'm going to stay in the NFC West. The division swept their week one games. Is there any one team that maybe impressed you or surprised you the most?
So I guess I was expecting the Rams to do what they did. So that wasn't too surprising. And the 49ers, honestly, maybe weren't quite as good as I was thinking the way they would be, or not as crisp. They didn't finish the game clearly as well as I thought they would. The Cardinals, to me, were the team that stood out. They looked, you know, kind of like a buzzsaw on offense. I don't know what to make of the Titans. I guess we'll find out next week. Aren't the Seahawks playing the Titans this week?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the Titans, to me, just didn't look very good. And the Cardinals just ran over them. They were able to do their thing. And we've been waiting for, you know, the quote-unquote Cliff Kingsbury offense to kind of show up the last couple of years. And in the first half, I think they ran, the Cardinals did 3 and 4 receiver sets, like 70% of the time. It was very much, you know, open things up, spread it out. They've got the talent on the outside. And I think now with Rondale Moore, you know, Christian Kirk looked really good. AJ Green, and obviously DeAndre Hopkins is a superstar. So now it seems like they have kind of like the horses to run the offense that Kingsbury wants to run. And if Kyler can keep playing the way he did, the Cardinals could be one of those sneaky teams. Obviously, Chandler Jones getting 5 sacks in a game is always going to help them. I don't think that's something he could probably keep up, but, you know, they're a team that could be feisty this year. And I wasn't quite expecting them to look so good.
Yeah. He is Danny Kelly. You should be following him at Danny B. Kelly. You need to be reading his work for The Ringer. Listen to The Ringer Fantasy Football Show. All of it is excellent. Danny, we love talking to you when you come on. We hope we can get you back again this season, because it seems like it's going to be a really fascinating one for Seattle.
Often this season. Yeah. Danny, could we make that
happen?
Danny,
please come back.
Sure thing. Yeah.
It would be really awkward live over the air if you'd said, no, I'm really busy.
But it's like proposing at a ballpark. Like, it's...
We appreciate you saying, yeah, no, we'll totally hang out sometime.
Thank you, Danny.
But no, definitely appreciate it, guys.
Thanks. Thanks. Talking to you. All right, it is time for Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
I'm really glad Danny didn't break up with us live on air.
Yeah, that would have been heartbreaking.
It was smart to put him on the spot to where it would have violated some social norms and niceties for him to say no.
That's right.
Got him right where we want him.
Yep.
First down, Jake. Did we get the full taste of what Gerald Everett's role in this offense will be?
No, you didn't. What you did get a full taste of is his ability to create yards after catch. That's one of the great strengths of Gerald Everett, and one of the reasons I was so excited about his addition along with Shane Waldron, because Shane Waldron knows exactly how to use Gerald Everett appropriately. And his ability to be used in the screen game, and there's different types of screens. So sometimes you call the traditional tight end screen, which is the same form as a running back screen. It's just using it with different personnel. It's a creative way to get the tight end involved instead of using your running back. So there's that type of screen, and then there's using Gerald Everett out on the edge as a receiver. So throwing him a quick pass, him catching it, allowing to have blockers in front. So you can use him in a bunch of different ways in the screen game to get the ball out of Russell Wilson's hands, create good explosive play through his ability to catch and make explosive plays. He's an aggressive runner. He's fast. He's explosive. But what you haven't seen yet is him in the choice route game. Him being utilized as a man-to-man nightmare against linebackers and safeties, and that's exactly what Gerald Everett can do, and I expect we're going to see a whole lot of that as well this season.
Had great yards after catch in a somewhat limited role with LA.
Correct.
As well, so it'll be good to see all of that. Second down. Jake, why do you believe Marquise Blair and Ugo Amadi were splitting time at nickel on Sunday?
Obviously, these are two really good players. Marquise Blair, Ugo Amadi, love them both, want to see them be utilized and not sit on the bench. But the real reason why I believe Marquise Blair and Ugo Amadi are splitting time at nickel right now is because that Marquise Blair isn't quite up to assignment sound right now. And there is a competition that is being played out because of that. So Ugo Amadi, I believe, is a very good football player that if he was given the opportunity to be the sole starting nickel, I think would grow tremendously. But he doesn't have the same ceiling and talent that Marquise Blair brings to the table. The only problem with Marquise Blair is that he has had an issue with understanding the playbook fully, having his roles and assignments understood completely. And Marquise Blair did a good job out there on the field on Sunday. But I could see a couple times you look at the film that he gets lost in coverage assignments. And so that's one area that they have to clean up. And this competition, you've got to get it figured out, because one of these guys is going to need to step up. And I don't anticipate them throwing Marquise Blair and Ugo Amadi split time throughout the entire season. Something's got to give. But I believe that's why you ultimately saw that come week one.
Third down. All right, are you surprised the Seahawks didn't make any additions to the roster this week? Because we were looking at Geno Atkins. We're looking at if they're going to have an injury at running back long term. So are you surprised at all?
No.
Okay.
Just for the simple fact that they performed extremely well. If the defensive line had not held up in the running game, had they not gotten after the passer, I do think they make a move this week with the veteran players that are out there, with a Geno Atkins type player. But you don't need to. It's working, right? So why try to add to something that is an unknown when you have players that you're hoping step up, and they actually do that. They step up and they play well. So right now, they don't need that. They don't need that extra addition to that defensive line with who is available right now. Is that available player going to take that group to the next level? I don't personally believe so, or else they would have made that move before the season had started. So now it makes you wonder, okay, is this group going to sit back and watch the NFL season play out and just wait till the trade deadline to see if there is somebody that could definitely be picked up and added to this team that could make a boost to this roster? And I believe that ultimately is where they are going to, you know, sit back and wait and be aggressive when the timing is right.
Fourth down. All right, your film room video for 710sports.com will be coming out today, in which you broke down the passing touchdowns from the game, all four of them. So which one from Sunday's game stood out to you the most and why?
Well, I broke down three out of the four. Wyman is breaking down, for his Football 101, he's breaking down Tyler Lockett's corner post play to end the half. I took the other three. And really, in the highlight of the other three plays that you can go and check out, video will be coming out later today, is the idea of the execution and the scheme and how well it's played out. The one that stands out to me the most is Gerald Everett's touchdown. And it's not because it's a new player, you're getting him involved. It's because of the scheme of the play and Russell Wilson's understanding of the scheme and what they're trying to get out of it. The coverage, they played too high coverage in the low red zone, and they had a play perfectly set up where they were going to make that Mike linebacker's life very difficult. Whatever he did was wrong, and what the the next player, which was Darius Leonard, who's the Sam linebacker in that situation, whatever he did was wrong. So within one play, they created two two-on-one situations. At first, it was Will Dissly and Gerald Everett. The next was Gerald Everett and Tyler Lockett. And guess what? Gerald Everett and Tyler Lockett were both wide open. And Gerald Everett was just the first guy in the progression that caught the touchdown. So just all of it together, just scheme-wise, new plays, new system, a refreshing way to attack coverage. I mean, it's just, it's awesome to see, and you hope that it continues, and you hope that as they gain this positive experience, as they're playing and having success in this new system and these new play calls, that they get even more confident, and you see Russell Wilson execute it even faster and even better than what he did and what he showed on Sunday, which, I mean, obviously was at an incredibly high efficient level.
Fantastic. All right. That was four down territory. It's time for the Roof Report, brought to you by Acton's Quality Roofing. The roof is on at T-Mobile Park. It felt like it was like some light showers when I left the house this morning, but not too cold.
Maybe they'll open it up for first pitch.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Right now, though, Roof is on. Also, Jake and Stacey is presented exclusively by CarPros Kia Tacoma. Do you guys remember when an hour ago I said, have you heard the conspiracy theory about Ryan Fitzpatrick's hip injury?
Do I remember? That's the only thing I've been thinking
and
about.
I've had a hard time doing this show, having these conversations, because I can't get over it.
There is a conspiracy theory about Ryan Fitzpatrick's hip injury, and you will not believe it. It's wild. I'm buying in. It's a ride. And then I made you guys wait an hour. Well, now it's finally here because it's coming up next in the timeline. Don't go anywhere.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Jake and Stacey is presented exclusively by CarPros Kia Tacoma. I told you guys that there was a conspiracy theory about Ryan Fitzpatrick's hip injury, but I'm going to make you wait just 2 minutes longer because first we have to get to our first story in the timeline. This one about ESPN's Dan Orlovsky. If you think about the coolest impression you can do or impersonation you can do, I don't know that I have one. Do you guys have one off the top of your head?
No. I mean, I don't
have. Stacey, you can't think of, you do a great British person impression.
Oh, I do a great British person
Curtis. Why did you do that?
Curtis does a great one. In it. Hey, bro.
Okay. All right.
What you say about Dan Orlovsky? What kind of impression do you think he'd be doing?
Is this Rob Staten that we're talking to? Who's
yeah,
that?
Exactly.
Seattle Seahawks.
So it is not an accent, really, but Dan Orlovsky can do an uncanny impression of a barking dog.
Okay, today I learned Dan has an unbelievable skill. It's not giving takes. It's not playing football.
Thanks so much. Thanks.
It is his ability to bark like a dog.
You want to hear it?
Yes, of course. All
right. Like what? You guys, I'm not...
Sounds like a little.
That sounds like an actual dog.
So there were a lot of people out there that were saying, "No way, that is fake! Like you're trolling us, and you've just got like a soundbite that
haters
you have
will
playing.
Say it's fake."
So Mina did it again with him from a different angle and a different video. And yes, I mean it's 100% him. I don't understand this. I don't know how you can do that. Very weird talent, but. Okay. I mean, you could probably freak anybody out who's just, you know, walking into somebody's yard. I mean, I don't know how that gift and talent comes in handy.
816. I used to do a great flamingo impersonation, but my wife told me to stop. Had to put my foot down.
Nice.
Love a good dad joke.
Good dad joke right there. I have told Jackson a couple of them just because... You know,
we gotta try him out.
You gotta try him out, but he just thinks it's all funny. The best part is that he tries to then make them up, and he's like, "So, why did the dolphin wave at the wave?
What?
Because It was a wave. He waved at him, Dad. Oh. Isn't that?
Is oh, it, Jackson's
but
so
then he's
good
like,
at dad
he's jokes. Like, is it that funny?
Just riffing.
Like, just looking at me like he just slayed that joke every time. It's the best.
Okay, now it's time for the Ryan Fitzpatrick theory. So this happened in Washington, D.C. sports radio. A caller called in. They're talking, obviously, about Ryan Fitzpatrick hip injury, which is going to hold him out, I think, something like 6 to 8 weeks. So that was an injury that he suffered on Sunday in the game. But this caller... who called into a DC area station radio station says, no, I think he actually re-aggravated it. Here's why I know that. Cut 12.
What's up, man? You're on with Beamish and Finley.
I'm pretty sure Ryan Fitzpatrick re-injured his hip during the game against the Chargers. Where you guys saw round two, we saw round one at Symington Water Park in Leesburg at Ida Lee on the last day. Just three times a week, he'd bring all of his 7 million boys up there. They'd go on the slow slide. He always go on the fast slide. And then about mid-afternoon, it looked like he whacked his hip on the right on the fast slide, and then he didn't do no slide the rest of the day. Everybody at the park saw he was going around either like a awkward gait or a shuffle walk the rest of the afternoon, and he parked it in his chair. I think he re-aggravated it during that game.
Let's run through this again. So you were at a water park in Leesburg. What's the name of the water park?
Yes. Symington.
Is that a real place, Cody? All right. Cody says it's true. And you're saying you saw Fitzpatrick hurt his hip on a water slide?
Yeah, everyone knew he was there. He goes down the fast. He has like seven kids.
He has seven kids.
They go like 2-3 times a week, and they go down the slow slide. He goes down the fast slide. And everybody said he whacked it at the very end of the fast on the last day we were open.
Guys, hear me out. I absolutely believe this theory that Ryan Fitzpatrick, in his mid to late 30s, going down the fast water slide, whacked his hip at this water park, to which this employee who says the last day we were open presumably works there.
Yeah, he had seen Fitzpatrick there multiple times throughout the week.
So Fitzpatrick hurts his hip. He's still fine enough to play.
And Fitzpatrick's a very recognizable guy.
Oh, you would know. You would know it was him. Beard
I don't know. I mean, there's so many people that have beards like that. I mean,
what?
You know, could have been
anybody. I don't
anybody.
Know anyone that can grow a beard like that. Name one.
By the way, he grows that in like 3 days.
Yes.
Like, seriously. No. When I was with the Jets, he one day he'd showed up and he'd shaved off his beard and everybody was like, what is going on? And I kid you not, like 3 days later, it was full beard back. I'd never seen anything like that. I'd never had beard envy in my life because I don't really grow like a beard. It's like scraggly. And the only reason why if I have facial hair, I'm just too lazy to shave it off.
That should be a bet you guys make during the season that if Jake gets something wrong, he has to grow a beard.
Nick Mangold made me as a
Jake?
Rookie. He made me grow out my mustache.
Oh, Jake.
And it was
Jake?
Awful.
Jake.
It was awful.
You have to pick. We do Bold Take Fridays in which we do predictions. You have to pick this next Bold Take Friday, and you have to be willing to bet on it. And if it's wrong, you have to grow a
Stacey,
mustache.
Why would I do that to myself?
Because it's funny for us. What?
For the clout.
For the clout.
For the clout. Nah, I'm really good. I don't think Brooke would appreciate me doing that. But
well, Brooke's
got
to help you with the bold take then. You guys got to put your heads together, figure out something that's going to happen.
But regardless of that, so Ryan Fitzpatrick, I agree. He is a very recognizable person. This person, this individual who calls in, clearly has seen him a bunch, and it's just a very elaborate lie. Yes. Well, I mean, could he have hurt himself? Could he have tweaked himself? Is that the reason he then, in fact, hurt his hip in the game? I mean, dude, that's next level.
I believe it.
You do?
I do.
You really do?
Curtis.
Look, probably about a year and a half ago, my wife and I, we were engaged at this time. We went to Great Wolf Lodge down in in Battleground, I think is where it's at. And we went down a water slide, and boy, those things are so fast. And like, and I'm 30 now, and I was just like, holy cow.
Yeah, water slides hit you different.
I don't think 30s. I need to be going down a water slide this fast. I can only imagine Fitzpatrick, who is closer to 40 than he is 30. Going down the very fast one.
Yeah, he didn't go down the slow
one. No, he went down the very fast one where the angle is probably a straight drop into the pool or whatever.
By the way, have you guys done that? Have you guys gone on those types
of slides? No, everything scares me. Absolutely not. I'm very risk averse.
Yeah, have you done that?
Yeah.
No.
I refuse to do that.
I'm going to catch too much air doing that, and I'm going to end up on the side of the pool.
You get up off of the slide with just the biggest wedgie of all time. You're picking it in front of everybody.
Oh, gosh.
Kids around. Yeah. Look, I'm sorry.
Look, I'm going 40 miles an hour down this slide. Something's bound to happen.
Now, as crazy as this is, and Stacy, Curtis, are you saying you're buying this too?
I am.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So you two are buying this.
Yes.
Guess what? The Washington football team,
mm-hmm.
they're going to be investigating this. How much you want to bet they are legitimately going to investigate this because...
Well, it's a non-football injury.
Exactly.
Versus,
money is on the line, if that is the case... and so I think that there's going to probably be something going on in terms of the Washington football team definitely looking into if Fitzpatrick was going into that game with a non-football injury that he didn't want to disclose to the team for obvious reasons, and it aggravated and flared up in the middle of that game. I mean, my goodness, that would be insane.
What's the last injury you guys can think of where a player maybe tried to pass it off as something that actually happened, but it, you know what I mean? When you find out a player injured himself, tripping down the stairs or falling in the shower.
Yeah, I know Jeff Kent, former National League MVP, he tore his ACL or something, and he was like, oh, I was working out, and really he got into a motorcycle accident and tried to pass it off as that.
Right. I mean, this has happened before, but that would be otherworldly. I mean, that would be pretty intense. So if I'm Ryan Fitzpatrick, honestly what I'm doing is I am not admitting that injury happened, but I am going to make fun of the rumor and report. I would show up in some floaties.
Yeah.
I would show up in my swimsuit and
that's a good
gear
way to do it.
And just try to diffuse the situation as much as possible. I think 206, you're right. A lot of people are saying they're buying the slide gate, and that's exactly what it's called.
By
the slide gate.
I got to offer up a correction here because the text line's getting on me about the location of Great Wolf Lodge. It's in Grand Mound, Washington, not Battleground. I got the two confused.
A little bit.
I feel like that's acceptable.
Centralia.
Yeah.
And by the way, it's a great time.
Don't forget Mike Salk is back in the mornings each weekday from 6 to 10 a.m., including the Jerry DePoto show every Thursday at 8:30. All right, we're going to take you guys into the Mariners pregame show, but we'll start out with a pregame preview. Today's Mariners matinee game is as close to a must-win as you can possibly get. We'll talk about what's at stake next.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Driven by CarPros Kia of Tacoma.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
Today's Mariners game is as close as you can get to a must win. I mean, unless you're in like game 159, 160, you know, you're down to the wire, which the Mariners very well might be. But right now, today's win is the difference between being two games back or four games back. You've got 16 left to play after this game. If you're four back, you have no more games against wildcard teams that are currently in front of you. You've got two series, seven games total against Oakland, but right now they're behind you in the standings. So you can hold them off in the standings and you can improve your record, but this is kind of your last chance to make a pretty notable push in terms of Boston being in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
Win today, unless my math is wrong, you're two games back with 16 to play.
You are. Yes, you are squarely two games back unless there were teams ahead of you that helped you out. You could gain even further. So this is a huge opportunity, and you have to make the most of it here. So when you talk about the Mariners as a whole, I mean, gosh, this is the shot. This is it. And so I think that when you talk about this game, it was hard to lose last night being there at the park, but you dust yourself off, and the Mariners knew very quickly that the game was over. So you send in Ramirez, you send in, what is his last name, Andressi, and you regroup, and you go after this game hard, and you throw everything that you have at it. So the one thing that I am going to be very anxious to see, very curious to see, and it's a question that we asked yesterday, is, all right, if there is one game on the line, you absolutely have to have it. Who is the pitcher that you're going to roll out there to start this thing off? and we had debate. Marco, Logan, Chris Flexen, and Curtis, you said Marco Gonzalez.
I did.
And I called it a safe pick. And when I said that, I didn't mean it as a knock on your take. I didn't mean it as a knock on Marco Gonzalez. I meant that as a compliment because he is the safe pick. He's the guy that when you gave him an extension, he's supposed to be your ace. He's supposed to be your stabilizer of this rotation. He is as competitive as anybody in this league. And this is his opportunity. This is his time to prove that he is just that guy. And quite honestly, this is a moment as a kid in the backyard when you just recreate, you're shooting hoops, you're counting down, mm-hmm. and you make the last second buzzer beater. When you're you know, in the backyard, you got the ball in your hand, you're creating the scenario of these big moments. This is one of those big moments that you dream of as a kid and that I'm sure Marco Gonzalez has wanted on his shoulders. It's time to prove whether or not you're the man for the job or not.
Yeah, it's speaking of kind of chances to prove something, looking at just the lineup, let me quickly tell you the changes. Everything's pretty standard. At DH today, instead of Bowers, you've got Luis Torrens. And then at catcher, instead of Raleigh, you've got Tom Murphy. Don't mind, obviously, either of those decisions today for this finale. Torrens, we know, has been hot during the season. Murphy is fine. He's batting ninth. Jared Kelnick, though, speaking of big moments, this is what I'm getting to. Jared Kelnick now batting eighth, moving back in the in the lineup just a little bit. He was one of the guys. He was the first guy up to bat when I talked about that fourth inning bases loaded situation with no outs, ended up striking out. He has been improving overall over the course of the last month, and that's a good thing. But he's been in a couple of those moments where I just think, oh, this could be it. This could be the moment that he has. And outside of forcing walking in a run and maybe one other moment, he hasn't been able to meet those expectations yet. It's a lot to ask of a 22-year-old, but it's weird. He keeps being the one to walk up in those moments.
He does.
Mostly because obviously the guys at the top of your lineup are going to get on base, but
he's going through the refiner's fire right now, and you just want that moment to pop for him, and he's gotten plenty of those chances. And you bring up that back half of the lineup. You bring up Jared Kelnick. You bring up these players. Somebody's got to play hero at the back half of that lineup. That or your best players at the top end of the rotation have to be outstanding. Mm-hmm. They've got to come through for you in a big, big, big way. So this is the opportunity that I know the Mariners, they realize the significance of the moment, and we'll see if they can perform and come through big in this moment. And I just can't get over and stress enough how important this game is. But what are you more confident in, that someone in the back half of the lineup is going to play hero, or that, you know, the top end of this lineup actually puts a full game together?
1,000% the top end. Mitch Haniger has been phenomenal. JP has been great. Ty has at times slowed down a little bit, but obviously did he have an RBI single yesterday?
He did, yes.
I mean, he has... It's Ty France. Like, you know, the power is there. You know, he's a great hitter.
The moment last night,
if nothing else,
he
can get on base because he'll get hit.
Surprisingly, the Red Sox elected to walk Seager
and to get to Ty France.
And France, on the very first pitch, I thought he knocked one out of the park. From my view, it looked like that thing was going, gone. And that would have been so poetic. And I wish that would have happened so he could have given the Red Sox dugout a piece of his mind for you know, wanting to see him at the plate. It went foul, but those are the types of moments that I hope that we're seeing tonight from Ty France, from Kyle Seager, from Mitch Haniger. You just need these guys to step up and perform in a big, massive way tonight or today. Yeah. Both of you guys are going to be at the park, right?
Yes.
Both of you guys are going to be at the game.
Yeah, we're not sitting anywhere near each other.
Yeah.
All right, but here's the thing.
Unfortunately, right,
here's
Curtis?
What you have to do, because I'm not going to be there. And Curtis, I understand you have Willa.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
But you guys need to bring it. Stacy?
Yeah.
You got to bring it. You got to bring the juice. You got to bring the energy. You can't let those Red Sox fans take over that park.
Here's the thing. I feel like I cannot pull a Jackson and turn around as an adorable 5-year-old Red Sox fans.
You have to.
You know what's going to happen is you guys are going to see a video of a fight circulating on Twitter, because I'm going to think I can pull off what Jackson did, and everyone's just going to laugh. How adorable.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, probably. You're right. We need this one, guys. I hope we're coming in tomorrow talking about a huge, huge win for the Mariners.
All right. We are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Marco Gonzalez and the Mariners take on the Red Sox in the series finale today. Pre-game show is at noon. First pitch is at 1:10 p.m. right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. That'll do it for Jake and Stacy today. For Jake Heaps, for Curtis Rogers, I'm Stacy Ross. Thank you so much for listening to us. We will be back tomorrow. As a reminder, tomorrow is also the huddle, so we're getting you ready for Seahawks, Titans. We're already doing a preview, already looking ahead. But first, before we do any of that, it's the Mariners. They need to win this one. Big finale against Boston. We're taking you right into the pregame show, so don't go anywhere. Don't touch the dial. Don't move. It's coming your way next on 710 ESPN Seattle.